Hello, and thanks for turning on The Blender, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's weekly podcast. I'm Bruce Jacobs, a producer at RFERL, and I'll be your host this week. In this episode, scientists catch a glimpse of something faster than the speed of light.
It really is an astonishing, almost revolutionary result for physics, which I think is exactly why we need to be extraordinarily cautious before we start jumping up and down saying Einstein was wrong.
And Pakistani actress Veena Malik confronts a cleric in a fiery televised confrontation over women's rights and religious values.
All the messages I received from the girls of Pakistan, that you have given us a hope to stand up.
But we begin with this week's clash between Russian President Medvedev and the country's long-serving finance minister, Alexei Kudrin. Their televised angry exchange took place after Kudrin said he'd refuse to serve under Medvedev in May when he's expected to take the prime minister's post, with Vladimir Putin returning to the presidency. Medvedev called the finance minister an irresponsible chatterbox and basically demanded his resignation. I'm joined now by The Guardian's Moscow correspondent, Miriam Elder, for a closer look at what's going on here. Miriam, why did such a testy dispute between two high-level figures spill out on Russian television like this? What did you make of that?
That's a pretty huge question, and a lot of things remain unclear. Well, first of all, let's start with this. The fact that Putin announced this decision on Saturday that he would return to the presidency and that Medvedev would become prime minister, although it was an expected decision, the timing wasn't expected. And a lot of people in the Kremlin elite, in the Russian elite, had no idea it was going to happen. Kudrin was probably one of them. He was in America when it happened. And there is quite a lot of speculation that he expected to be prime minister. You know, he's been in this finance minister post for 11 years now, and he does have personal ambitions. So one of the theories is that he was quite upset with the decision, and this was just an honest lashing out. As for why it was shown on TV, another positive, I suppose, for the Kremlin elite that came out of this is the fact that they need to show that Medvedev is not a lame duck president, that he's still taking the decisions. And even if the effect is the opposite, that's what was shown on TV.
Now, Kudrin's extremely close with Putin. I know that they speak to each other on a very familiar basis. I mean, is this revealing at all about Kudrin's relationship with Putin or Medvedev's relationship with Putin?
I don't know if I'll answer the Medvedev part because I'm not quite sure how much Medvedev actually matters. I'm not entirely convinced that he will take up the role of prime minister, but let's focus on Putin. The fact is, yeah, they do remain very close, and everybody around Putin says that Kudrin will take up another role on the Putin team. There's some speculation he can go to the central bank. There's speculation he can take on some other role. But the fact of the matter is, what's happening in Russia right now is we're heading towards parliamentary elections where United Russia is incredibly nervous, and they need to spend a lot of money in order to make people happier and boost their support. And that's something that Kudrin has always been against. So the frightening thing here is that the more hardline elements inside Russia have won out, and we'll see these, you know, massive spending packages that could be disastrous for the economy.
Well, what is Medvedev's lame duck status, or the lack thereof? What does that mean for the next coming months, where Medvedev is basically in a position where people are aligning themselves with Putin within his own cabinet?
The problem is that Medvedev was never really a significant figure. He does have his supporters, and the threat right now is that we'll see some more resignations. You know, who knows what will happen with Arkady Dvorkovich, who is his chief economic advisor, and another liberal and another guy who's just trying to save the Russian economy right now. So we can expect to see possibly some other resignations in the future. But what does it mean for Medvedev as a lame duck? He's been seen as a, if not insignificant, then less significant figure for so long that it'll be more of the same, just in kind of more dramatic fashion.
Do you think the loss of Kudrin will have any direct or indirect impacts in the coming months on either the way the country's governed or the economy itself?
Well, let's see what happens and if he takes on another role. I think, foreign investors especially want to see him come back. We've seen a lot of capital flight to varying degrees since 2008, but particularly in the past few months. So I would expect to see some effects in terms of that. what's surprising in the short run is that today the markets are up and the ruble is strengthening, which, you know, none of us really quite know how to link it because we expected the exact opposite to happen. But, you know, Kudrin is seen as the guarantor of economic stability as much as it can be had in Russia. So I can't see how there would be any good effects from it.
Is there anything else that you found surprising, interesting, or odd in the events as they've occurred this week?
I mean, the most surprising thing is that for the first time in very many months, we don't have a clear picture of what's happening in Russia. It does point to some intense elite struggles in the background. Mikhail Prokhorov, the oligarch and the former head of Pravaya Dela, wrote a really interesting blog post today where he said there were tectonic shifts happening in elite realignments behind the scenes and everybody trying to just to figure out what's going on in the future because, you know, Putin is sitting up there and taking these decisions on his own and not informing people outside just his closest circle. And that must lead to a lot of fear. And so, you know, the next few weeks and months will certainly be very interesting.
And do you make anything of Putin's role in this drama that's playing out or his sort of lack of overt comments? What do you make of what he's been up to this week?
What it seems like right now, and I'm loath to make any certain pronouncements because the situation is so fluid, but what it seems like right now is that he's sacrificed Kudrin for the sake of this tandem. Now, let's see if he brings Kudrin back, you know, possibly as prime minister, possibly in another strengthened role. But right now, it seems like he's chosen, you know, the quote unquote stability of the tandem and this need for intense pre-electoral spending. And so that he sacrificed, you know, the man who's widely recognized as the single most efficient man inside the Russian government. It's kind of surprising.
Although Medvedev does seem to have been weakened by this action, I mean, do you see Putin as having benefited by weakening Medvedev?
How would you describe Medvedev as being weakened? You know, once the decision was announced on Saturday, he was already weakened. And we understood that this is a man with no significant independent power base. He's completely at the whim of Putin. So to say that this, you know, lowered him even more and boosted Putin, I'm not quite sure that, you know, that he can fall any further. What powers are there to take away from him?
No, I was just thinking along the lines of the finance minister directly challenging his authority on television. Just the very act itself seems to me to undermine his authority. I mean, if you don't think so, that's how it felt to me, but I'd respect your opinion on that.
No, I agree with you, but that's why I'm saying let's see what will happen going forward and if Medvedev will really take up the premiership. I'm not totally convinced that that will happen.
Okay, Miriam Elder, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. This week, believe it or not, a physics experiment grabbed headlines around the world. It suggested that perhaps Einstein was wrong. Maybe, just maybe, something can travel faster than the speed of light. The experiment involving a subatomic particle called a neutrino could have galactic-sized implications. Correspondent Ron Sinovitz talked about the discovery with James Gillis, the spokesman for the European Organization for Nuclear Research, also known as CERN.
One of the interesting things, you're saying that even the scientists that have conducted this research, they're not sure about the findings themselves. Could you explain what you've been telling people about this?
This kind of thing happens quite often in science, that an experiment will measure something that looks unusual. And the first thing you do there is say, we don't really believe this, and you try to understand it in terms of your experimental apparatus and your analysis techniques and so on and so forth. And most of the time you do that and you find some rather mundane explanation, it goes away. But occasionally you don't, right? So that's what's happened in this case. The collaboration that's analyzed this data has tried very, very hard to understand it in terms of their apparatus, and it hasn't gone away. So the next step is that you put it up for scrutiny by the broader particle physics community, and that's actually what's happening right now. So the collaboration has published its paper on a thing called the Archive, which is a place where people put their results before they go out to the peer-reviewed journals, and they'll be giving a seminar about it at CERN this afternoon. And this is all about asking the community to give this result a very close look and asking the rest of the particle physics community to see if they can repeat the experiment somewhere else.
Can we talk a little bit about how this is such groundbreaking findings, if it would be confirmed, how it's basically would change the foundations of modern physics as we know it?
Well, yeah, Einstein's theory of general relativity says there's a cosmic speed limit, and that's the speed of light. Nothing can go faster than that. So what this measurement is a measurement of the time it takes a beam of neutrinos to fly from CERN 730 kilometers through the Earth to a particle detector underground in a place called Gran Sasso in Italy. It's about 732 kilometers away, and the time of flight is about 2.4 microseconds to do that. And what they appear to be measuring is that the neutrinos are arriving early, only very slightly early. I mean, it's a 20 part per million effect, but early nevertheless. So if that's the case, then it really is an astonishing, almost revolutionary result for physics, which I think is exactly why we need to be extraordinarily cautious before we start jumping up and down saying Einstein was wrong. And that's what we're doing now. We're trying to really get to grips with this result, looking for independent measurements before we can make any definitive statements about what it really means.
Okay, now I understand that there were some similar findings by Fermilab in Chicago, but the margin of error that they had was greater than the difference in the speed. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. And that's a very interesting result, too. I mean, Fermilab has a very similar experiment. They send a beam northwards to an underground detector about the same distance away, and they did the same thing. They measured the time, and they also saw that the neutrinos seemed to be arriving slightly early. But their precision wasn't as high as this experiment, so they weren't able to make a strong statement on it. But what they're doing now is preparing to upgrade their equipment so they can make a more precise measurement of it, and we're all very much looking forward to seeing that.
You've mentioned twice you talk about underground detector, and of course I know about the particle generator. Is this beam of light, is it being sent entirely underground through a tunnel that length, or is it above ground sent to an underground?
No, well, first of all, it's not a beam of light. It's fundamental particles called neutrinos. These are tiny little particles that are very, very important in the way that the universe behaves, because they're so ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They flood the universe, but they're very tiny. They're very hard to detect. They interact very weakly. I mean, we're constantly bathed in a flux of neutrinos coming from space, largely a large number from the sun, that just most of which just go straight through the Earth without interacting. So we want to understand those particles, and that's what these experiments are all about. So because they can go through the Earth without interacting, it's quite easy for labs like Fermilab and like CERN to generate beams of them and send them down into the Earth. And that's what we do. And they go down through the Earth, and then they reemerge in these detectors, in our case, 732 kilometers away. So they're not in a tunnel. They're actually literally passing through the Earth.
Let's talk a little bit more about this feeling that even some of the researchers may have, that the findings can't be right.
I mean, I think that the general sense here is that relativity has withstood the test of time for nearly a century, and it's not because people haven't been testing it. People have. People have been measuring, doing experiments, making observations about relativity for a very long time. And so far, nothing has shown that anything breaks this cosmic speed limit. So this would actually be at odds with quite a lot of what's gone before. It doesn't mean it's wrong, but it means that there's a very strong feeling in the community that there must be a different explanation out there.
And if the findings are confirmed by follow-up research, what would that mean for the physics? I mean, would there have to be a complete reworking of the basic principles that modern physics are founded on?
I'm not sufficiently familiar with the physics to go into great detail, but it would certainly mean that we'd have to revisit Einstein's equations to some extent. But it's far too early to start speculating on that, really, at this stage.
I suppose this is Einstein's theory of relativity versus, would this be more like a quantum physics when we're talking about subatomic particles?
Yeah, one of the big dilemmas arising from 20th century physics is that so much of modern physics is based on two pillars that came up in the early part of the last century. One of them is relativity and the other is quantum mechanics. But there is as yet no quantum theory of relativity is a theory of gravity. There's no quantum theory of gravity. So you know, it's trying to reconcile these two things is one of the really, if not the most important goal for modern physics. So in some sense, you know, if you start to find things like this, then maybe that would give you a way to reconcile the two basic pillars of modern physics. But as I say, first of all, we need to make sure whether this thing is real or not.
Time frame do you think you're looking at to allow other scientists to follow up with experiments? Is it going to be months or years before we see any kind of follow-up research that would confirm?
I would suspect that it's at least months and probably years, because we send a lot of neutrinos through the Earth, but because they interact so weakly, you have to wait a long time. They interact very weakly, but if you send a lot of them, you will see some interaction. So I know that our experiments have been collecting data for 3 years, so this is based on 3 years' worth of data collection. So I think it's going to be a while before we see any any independent refutation or confirmation of this result.
З вами Радіо Свобода.
Радіо Фарда
Кушніка. Радіо Європа.
Радіо. Азатить радіосе.
Азатицюн КТМ.
28 languages, 21 countries, one voice. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
Pakistani reality TV star Veena Malik is used to improvising on stage, but even she was unprepared for the surprise guest who joined her on television recently, a religious cleric eager to criticize her career and personal choices. In an exclusive interview, Malik talks about how her confrontation with the Mufti reveals growing tensions between conservative Islam, modernity, and the role of women in Pakistan today. Correspondent Daisy Sindelar narrates this report, produced by Kristen Deasy and Farishta Jalalzai.
Traditional Islamic values in Pakistan are under attack by a sassy brunette known as Veena Malik. In the socially conservative country, moralizing against figures like Malik, an actress, model, and reality television star, can seem as routine as the call to prayer. All the more reason, then, for shock when she responded to her critics with this stinging rebuke.
There are Islamic clerics who rape the children they teach in their mosques and do so much more. Pakistan is infamous for many reasons other than Veena Malik. Since you have set up a court here, I demand that the court dispense justice.
But this was no courtroom. The venue was a TV studio in Lahore, where a shouting match took place between the brazen 27-year-old and a respected white-haired cleric named Mufti Abdul Kavi. Moments earlier, Kavi had admonished Malik to examine her conscience for her behavior on a popular Indian reality TV show, telling her she had disgraced Pakistan as well as Islam. Kavi later admitted he had never watched Malik's show himself. The debate on Malik's moral obligations had millions of Pakistanis glued to their television sets. The sheer audacity of an actress openly challenging a religious figure left many thunderstruck. For her part, Malik says she wants to give Pakistani women, particularly her young peers, more of a voice in society.
After this show, you won't believe the kind of huge response I have received from women of Pakistan, even the women who wear burqa and all. But now all the messages I received from the girls of Pakistan, that you have given us a hope to stand up. So I think, yeah, things are already started. Right now, situation is so terrible in Pakistan. Government is fighting at the simultaneously many tasks. We have the terrorism, things like that. Government doesn't have time for a woman to think about. So women, they should think for themselves, you know, they have to think for themselves because no one else is going to give a damn in Pakistan.
Weeks after the debate's airing, Malik was injured in a suspicious road accident. She was hospitalized and has since taken refuge in Dubai, where she continues working for Voice of Women, a nonprofit organization she founded to help female victims of domestic violence and other abuse throughout Asia. Violence against women is an enormous problem in Pakistan. Some 1,000 women die in honor killings every year. Reports say as many as 4 in 5 women are subject to abuse in their own households. Malik is no stranger to any of this. Born into a poor family of 7 children in the northern city of Rawalpindi, she says her mission comes out of personal experience.
But since a kid, I've been watching my dad hitting my mom for no reason, whether you did not cook food on time and things like that, little things. When I grew old, my elder sister, she was 14, my father married her off. The other sister was 11, my father married her off. I was in the 6th standard when my father said that, now this is your turn. I stood up and I was hardly 12, 13 at that time. I said, no, why should I get married? I mean, why should I? I mean, I don't want to. And then my father said, no, you have to. And then this was the first time I stood up for myself.
In Malik's telling, her father, a retired army officer, told her he had no more money for her studies, so she worked to put herself through school. At 17, she decided to go into show business, a decision derided by her relatives as an unconscionable disgrace. She fell in love for the first time, she says, when she was 20 years old. Rumors abound, but she says she is not in a relationship at present, adding that things fell apart with a former boyfriend after she became the victim of physical abuse. But she came out of that experience with a message.
I want to tell them that you are beautiful and strong and you don't need to hide under the shadow of a man. Just because you're a woman, they have to be told that they don't have to wait for a man to feed them. They have to be told that they are strong. These women don't know how strong and beautiful they actually are.
Her decision to debate Kaveh in public was an impromptu move. She was not given advance notice, she says, that he would be participating in the interview. I had no idea, she says, whether they would kill me when I stepped out of the television studio or whether they would welcome me.
That was Daisy Sindelar narrating a report produced by Kristen Deasy and Farishta Jalalzai. And that's all we have for this week. I'm Bruce Jacobs. Thanks for turning on the blender from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.